Why is Jim treating the magician poorly?
Little known fact about me, before I was a magician, I used to work at a rope factory.
Not true, because that's not a real place.
But I never could seem to figure out those knots.
That's not a real knot. When you pull on it, it disappears.
What the hell? All right, where's Phyllis? Who's Phyllis? Look, this is really uncool, okay? I put on a clean show
okay,
here.
Okay, scram wizard.
What?
You heard me.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
And welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul. Dennis Freebe is over in Orlando town, shaving or something. I couldn't get a hold of him to do an intro today. He's having a busy day, and that's totally fine. Real quick, we're going to get into the interview with Justin Willman. Very fascinating about his career on TV, tricks, influences, all those different fun things. Really cool guy. Very nice to sit down with him. Real quick, if you'd like to donate to the podcast, you can do that right on our website. A dollar or two supports the podcast going on. It's twomagiciansonemic.com, where the PayPal is twomagiciansonemic@gmail.com. And leave us a review. If you like the show, write about it on iTunes. It takes like 30 seconds and greatly helps improve our ratings. If you don't like the show, you know, keep the comments to yourself. That's the internet is not a place to complain about things that you have no control over. Anyway, we hope you enjoy this lovely episode with the amazing Justin Willman.
Did you feel that sleight of mouth went up to your standards? You think it was exciting and fun? And because I loved it. I've mentioned this before. I thought it was just wonderful. And
Well, thank you.
Spoken to many people, and they thought it was great.
It was like a it was a failed pilot. It was never supposed to air. It was like a non-airing pilot.
Interesting.
That we were shooting to be considered for a series. So throughout the whole thing, we used music that we wouldn't be able to clear because this was never going to air. And we shot it as if it was episode 7 of season 1, where we didn't waste time to like say, here's who I am, here's what we're doing, here's why we're here. It was just kind of shot to be a specimen mid-season. Mm-hmm. And did not get picked up as a pilot, but tested really well by Comedy Central. So they we talked them into airing it as a one-off special.
Oh, cool.
Really just as kind of like... So we had to go through and change tons of stuff, and I had to go and voice over and whenever I said this week and next week and this episode, blah, 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 and change it to the show, tonight, whatever.
Oh, sure.
So... while it was never meant to be a little standalone thing, it kind of worked that way. Mm-hmm. The idea was that the show was going to be a thematic show, so each episode would kind of tackle a different topic or theme, and this particular one was technology, mm-hmm. but another one could be college or kids or food or travel, whatever. So I was really, I mean, I was thrilled with how it came out in the end. The fact that it was turning a no into a yes for something else felt mm-hmm. really good, and I would have been super bummed if it never got shown or never saw the light of day because, you know, you put a lot of time and effort into something. And unlike, you know, unlike like a TV show that where you're writing something very specific for this, like the magic that we created, I was, you know, really excited about and just would have been ashamed to never let people see it.
Did everything that you, like in the stage shots, mm-hmm. is that all original stuff you created for that show?
Yeah, let's see. Like the stuff we did on the stage, the printer trick.
Yeah.
We created for that show, which has now become a part of my act. The smashing of all the stuff at the end, we created for that show. I did the cue cards with Paul Scheer for that show. And that's a trick that I, from, what's his face?
Is that the Cue the Magic one?
Yes, Cue the Magic.
Okay.
Angelo Carbone.
Yeah.
Who's super clever, and he's been, it was very sweet. A couple years ago, I did that on The Tonight Show because I really wanted to do something with cue cards because, you know, a late night talk show is one of the few things that still uses those real life cue cards. So So he helped me kind of create that trick, and then he released it, and then we kind of kept tweaking it. We made it a fun trick that you could bring a celebrity guest on stage and with no practice actually do a trick with them where they'd do it, which was fun. Mm-hmm. So all that was really come up with and workshopped for the show. And then there was tons of other stuff that just didn't either make it into this episode. We couldn't get it to happen under that budget. You know, just tons of stuff that's on your whiteboard, like your dream board, that just doesn't end up working out. And there's a bunch of other field stuff that we shot that just didn't work out, didn't have... Like, we shot the thing that we went to the pot dispensary and did magic for high people. We also shot me doing magic for the Kid Geniuses, both of those same day. So beginning of the day, kid stuff. End of the day, stoners. And that was the only shoot day for the field stuff because it's so expensive to get out.
That was a wonderful scene just because I've done that. So if you're a strolling magician, you've performed for people like that so many times. It was just kind of beautiful to see that illustrated in such a wonderful way.
Yeah. I mean, one of the directives that the network really liked is that figuring out ways to use Comedy Central comedians.
Yeah.
That everyone knows and loves in the context of the show. So that was a chance to show, hey, here's Doug Benson. Mm-hmm. You know him for Weed.
He's great.
Here's a way to use Doug Benson as kind of a little side piece, you know?
Yeah.
So we really like that. And I also wanted to show range, and I just like that we were able to do stuff for super high people and kids in the same half hour.
Yeah, and I was just talking to your lovely wife. We normally don't talk about tricks on this podcast, but everything that was done in that special was very fascinating to me. If you don't mind just touching on it, what's it like doing a late night set, something like The Tonight Show? How do you prep for something like that?
For Leno, like, it had always been my dream to do The Tonight Show, to do Leno. Like, he was kind of the reason I went to Emerson College, where I went in Boston, because I learned about the college from his biography, because he went there. And I had always just, like, for years went to sleep watching Jay Leno every night. And before that, Carson, I just always loved that whole setting, the late night talk show setting, and just had always dreamed, what would I do on the couch, you know? And there's no way to necessarily, for me at least, to prepare something for the couch because, like, I guess what I mean is, as your first appearance or second or third, like, until you're like Steve Martin regular, you know, like premiering Fly Dini on Carson, like, you want to do something that you can do in your sleep and that you've done in every situation, every angle, something that's bulletproof. Because, like, when I did Leno for the first time, I got the call literally the day before. I think Maria Sharapova had dropped out. I got a call at 3:00 the day before if I was available to be on the show the next day, which would tape at 3 p.m. So, and the guest was Hugh Jackman, who was the A guest. And they were like, we want you to do a trick with him because Jay's not really fun to do magic for. So I decided to do the cup overhead bit. That was something that I worked on with my buddy Cyril over the past couple years. And Stella loves it, too. We got dogs on mic.
They're on high alert.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So that was something that was, like, in my show, and I did it every night.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stella. It's okay.
So I worked that bit in the I just knew that would be the one to do.
Yeah.
It would be the one to do because it was a trick with somebody else. And I just thought, Hugh would be great because he loves magic.
You talked about this maybe on another podcast, but just not doing something that's very sleight of hand heavy. Is that true?
I mean, because your body is going through is experiencing nerves, at least for me, like unlike I'd ever felt in my life.
Yeah.
Like, it was very out of body because it's so surreal. You're in this place that you've watched all the time and you're talking to the biggest movie star in the world and, you know, and Jay Leno, one of your heroes, like, it's your body's going through weird things. So for me to try to, one, ask my body to do something that I don't often do, like to do some sort of slight was risky. I mean, if I'm going to do, if it's some slight that I've done on my life and I can do that in my sleep, cool.
Sure.
But, like, doing something new that requires non-shaky hands is is a bad idea, as Betty literally just walks.
She's trying to get twice. Into the podcast. It's okay. Yeah. It's okay. My dogs are always on my podcast when I do Skype.
Yeah. But also because you don't have controls over the angles, the shots they take. I mean, obviously you want to talk a director beforehand through And typically you don't get to talk the director through. You talk your producer through, who then has to talk the director through. So it's like a game of telephone tag.
Oh, wow.
Just to make sure they know where the action is, to get in frame, and then if there's anything to avoid from getting in frame, you know, to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the cup trick, I take the can that I previously crushed, and I kind of tidy up and throw things away, and a can switch happens in the process that was completely in frame. It wasn't ideal, you know, like... These days, to have it be TiVo-proof is tough.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
You want to hopefully have them not even on you when you want to have them cutting to an audience reaction or Jay doing something when you're doing the dirty work, and that way there's nothing to see. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you want it to be as bulletproof as possible.
I saw, I won't say his name just so I don't call him up, but I saw a taping of Conan. There's a magician on there, and they literally moved his whole set closer together just to get away with a few angle things. And I thought that was very clever.
Really?
It wasn't done like you would have never caught it unless you were a magician, even like at the taping.
Mm-hmm.
And
moved Conan's set.
Literally, yeah. Moved the couches slightly closer together.
Really?
And the table.
Was this something recently?
This was in October.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't want to, it was a good piece, but I don't want to call out the magician in case you get mad. But, yeah, I never even thought of, when I was sitting there in the audience, I never even thought of that. I'm like, oh, wow, you can play with their space.
Yeah, I mean, they're often very accommodating because most of these shows, they don't do magic a lot on their show, and they want to make sure that it looks good. You
sure.
know? And the producer who is shepherding your segment, I mean, a lot of times if the segment bombs, like, it's on that producer, too. I mean, so they're your champion. They want this to kill. They want you to win. It makes you look good. It makes them look good because something that they don't often do became a success because of that producer, you know? So
yeah.
they'll take some time. They'll bring you in the day before to rehearse. Like,
that's cool.
It's just, and it's also crucial, I think, to always bring somebody else with you who knows what to look for as your magic eyes. So,
yeah.
You know, like I'll always bring my buddy Chris Choco with me, who knows magic and TV, or my buddy Blake Voigt, just to kind of watch the camera angles they're taking to make sure that it passed, that
okay.
it looked good. Yeah.
And if something didn't pass, would you say, hey, can you go back and
sometimes, re-edit? I mean, that's like always, it's borderline, I mean, depending on your relationship with the producer, like you can imagine it could come off very diva-ish.
Yeah.
If you ask them to like edit it because of your segment. So you want to pick and choose. Like I remember with when I did Conan, I did Card and Balloon. And,
yeah.
Blake was there with me, and we luckily our producer took us into the truck to watch the tape. And there was maybe a couple things that I would have changed, but nothing crucial. So I was like, good, we're good. Because the key, I think, is to be easy to work with.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah,
if...
Because they're pumping that out.
They're pumping
it
out.
So quickly.
And now, like, a show like Ellen or something like that, they take out little snippets of time.
Sure.
You know? Sometimes they'll take out an entire trick, you know, if it didn't work or if it, you know, if it just went long. So it's normal for them to do a little editing pass. And if you can have a little say in something, if they wouldn't spot why it... You know, what would make it look better, but you can explain to them. They'll be like, oh, yeah, you're right. That does look
good. Yeah. Ellen especially, I noticed they cut that show quite a bit. You can see those edits for sure.
Because they get so much into a one-hour Ellen show.
Yeah.
So many segments, so many celebrities,
mm-hmm.
so many games.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going
on.
Well, the reason I wanted to have you on is to promote your tour.
This
fancy tour. You've done a couple weekends already, correct?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a comedy club tour.
Yeah.
Fake Believe tour. Just want to call it this time. And it's less, I mean, when you say tour, it sounds like I have a tour bus and people.
Mm-hmm. Going around.
But it's me.
We're in LA right now.
Occasionally Jill. And then whoever's opening for me. And I'm a micromanager so much that I still end up setting all my stuff up. I do my own sound checks. So it's not very glamorous. And obviously we come back to LA between every stint. But yeah, tour sounds good.
Yeah.
It's a tour. Yeah. It's a string of shows. And I'm going... a lot of places in America, so it's likely that your listeners will have me in a venue near them somewhere.
Do you have something coming up this weekend?
I'll be in Columbus.
Okay. So
Columbus,
well,
Ohio.
I usually, you know, record in advance, but I'll put this up right away tomorrow.
Cool. Yeah, Columbus Funny Bone this weekend,
okay.
Vegas next weekend, Asheville the following weekend, and then in March I'm like at Mohegan Sun and down in San Diego.
What's it, you know, because I was asking you a little bit about this before, what's it like doing a comedy club as a magician, even though like if I saw your act and I didn't know who you were, I'd be like, oh, that's a comedian who does magic, you know, because your show is very comedy based. But still, you kind of have to break that magic stereotype, especially at a comedy club, I would think.
Yeah.
Any other challenges you run into?
Well, you know, it probably wasn't. I wasn't getting any offers to like headline comedy clubs until my show could be like what you just said, which was if someone who was coming just to see a comedy show didn't know what they were coming to see, would still feel like they had seen a comedy show after my set. So if it could pass for a comedian who happens to do a lot of magic in the show, then we're good, you know. But still, though, most comedy clubs where I go, they're always like, man, we know this is the first time we've ever done anything like this, you know. Like, it feels so different for them because it's not just a person up there holding a mic.
Yeah, and there's a lot more setup, and there's a lot more that could go wrong.
Right. I mean, and I've pared it down, so this, like, I try to be as low maintenance as possible. I don't use a headset mic anymore. I just use this mic on the stand.
Really, really.
And I use, you know, I run my music cues off an iPad. I do it myself just so their sound guy doesn't freak out.
Yeah, that's usually. I hate relying on other people.
Yeah.
Because they've never seen your show before most of the time.
Exactly.
They don't know what you're doing.
And I just know at a comedy club, they're so used to not having to do anything once the show starts.
Yeah, volume up, down, music.
While we know it's like, you're not asking much for in our world. But for them, it's like, you know, wow, this is way more work than normal.
Sure.
So I try to make it nice and simple.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's you'd think it might be an uphill grind, but people love the fact that it's something different. I mean, I think we as magicians like work really hard to create a show that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and that you know, has these great magical bells and whistles in it that obviously like are what we work hard for, and people really appreciate that because I think most people go to a comedy club and someone up there for 45 to 60 minutes. Very rarely even if they're the best, it's super hilarious. Very rarely does it have an arc to it or a finale, you know, and audience participation, which means that every show legit does feel different and really has crowd work and improv that they can tell doesn't happen every time. People really can tell the difference, and people say, man, I just love that you put so much work into it.
You know,
and then it really feels like a show.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people feel is unique, especially in the comedy club setting.
Yeah, I did a stand-up show this past Saturday, and you could just feel it. I think it was like fourth or something. I did like a 10-minute set, and you just feel the audience was just so appreciative of, just excited to see something different, you know? And I probably could have sucked, and I think they still would have been okay with it.
Which show was it?
It was a little late night comedy show downtown at the Hollywood Hotel. Young guys producing it, and I got last minute thrown into it.
And you were the only kind of non
only variety. Stand-up. Yeah, everybody else was doing stand up, and it's wild. And do you have people open for you?
I'll have
like an opener in the middle.
Yeah, like when Daniel Keno's available, he's one of my favorite comics, and I'll have him kind of as a special guest for a couple reasons. One, I like to have somebody travel with me who is super funny, will actually kind of watch my show. Because I like to treat these comedy clubs as the gym. Like, I like to use them to work on new things and to try something. Because you have five shows in a row, five or six, in the same venue with very similar conditions. So it's kind of a chance to say, all right, let me try this trick and see how I can evolve it throughout the week. Because you know that if you change one little thing, it's kind of like if you're doing an experiment, you have the conditions are the same, so you can actually change little things as you go and know if that made it work or not work. Versus you might try a trick at that show downtown, and then you might do it at a totally different venue, and it's hard to compare the two reactions because it's very different vibes, very different. You were among different acts, and it's just hard. So at a comedy club, you really get a chance to work it out.
Yeah.
So, and I like to bring somebody who will hold me to that standard. And who can help, you know, give me some punch ups and we can bounce ideas. So that's nice. And he's a straight up comic, really funny. So he kind of sets the bar really high, which forces me to take it to the next level, as opposed to someone who's kind of, you know, just okay, just good enough. And then, you know, you naturally, like, as performers, we have, I think there's some sort of just a competitiveness. Like, we can hear the audience. We can hear when we're killing and we can hear when we're not, and we want to be killing. Like, it's just a human instinct, you know? So when you're hearing somebody before you kill, your body naturally goes like, well, damn, all right, it's time to take it up to the next level. Yeah. And I think it just makes me do better when someone really great is opening up for me.
Yeah, yeah. It's, if you have somebody bombing in front of you, it's a weird thing because the audience is so excited for somebody good, quote unquote, to come along.
Well, it'll sometimes...
It's ultimately, I think, a bad
thing. I'll sometimes have to, you know, if I'm doing a show and I'll have somebody mediocre open up for me, I think the audience is kind of now worrying for a little while, like, oh God, I hope the headliner's not...
Yeah, I paid all this money to be here. I got a babysitter.
It's not
going to
be like this the whole time. And then when you first come on, it's like, okay, all right, we're on board.
Sure.
Versus if the person before you is killing it, you come on and you nail it right at the beginning, you got them hooked.
Yeah.
That could also backfire if I have a rough night or if it's just, if I'm not on, then maybe, you know, it goes down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, I mean, my brain really just goes into kind of take it to the next step zone. So
yeah, I
like every show to be my best show ever if I can, you know?
Yeah. And do you, I had a question and I lost it. I was trying to transition over there and I lost it. But, what are your, these are some of the standard questions I would go to and I didn't even use any of them yet, but, what are your influences like outside of magic? Like, performance-wise, music-wise?
Yeah, let's see. Outside of magic, influences. I feel like I just had some things rev me up recently. What did we do? Well, every city I go to, I like to go to... I mean, I love museums. I love... The Broad Museum here in L.A. is awesome. They've got a great collection of really old stuff, really new stuff, really great immersive... experiential kind of art exhibits. I like seeing how different people and artists say what they need to say. I love going to live music and plays. It very often just, I'll end up jotting notes the whole time just because it'll give me ideas about how to adapt that to my own show, you know, just different ways that different shows start and different ways that different shows end, and paying attention to, you know, how other shows use music or don't use music and use silence and not silence. Like, that stuff, it's all very important to me. Like, I mean, Banksy and great street art and things that are, you know, anarchistic are fun because I think... In a sense, even though we can't trash the place wherever we're performing, in a sense, it's kind of nice to have a little bit of anarchy there. Like when you go onto a talk show, have a little bit of like, you know, kind of overstepping your bounds, you know, like as simple as with the, you know, doing the cup trick on the Tonight Show, having the audience think I might be about to have him spill all over Jay's couch has everyone a little nervous for you know? So, yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff is really, it's just fun just to see how different performers do what they do, even if they're not trying to be funny or magicians at all. So soaking all that in is great. I love old Ernie Kovacs. He's one of my favorite, TV and filmmakers from the 50s and 60s. He, I felt, was so ahead of his time and, you know, anarchistic in that he, you know, his style was... Like, he's kind of like the first Viner in that he would do all these crazy things in one shot and one take and live TV and just love that stuff. And weird, doesn't care if you don't get it because there's going to be something else coming up right after that. I love that. You know, and obviously just great comedy. I mean, like Dimitri Martin, Bo Burnham, who are guys who are anarchist. I mean, they're doing comedy in a way that... It's very. They found their own thing.
Yeah, it's when you say Dimitri Martin, you're like, you know exactly what someone. If you've seen him, you know exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I love that. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Where does I caught your show at the Castle a couple weeks ago, and every trick I noticed has like a beginning, middle, ending, and then another ending. So like a false ending, if you will, and then an actual ending to do like a double fool you or. it reminded me of very much like a Penn and Teller style of this is how it's done, but not really.
Exactly.
Where does that come from? Because that's just so fun to watch because you get the audience thinking, oh, all right, I see how this is done. And you then, know, nope.
It is very Penn and Teller. I don't think I ever thought.
I mean, it's not like, Penn and Teller, but I. But they, in terms of people who kind of do that, yeah.
You know, I think what it is that I discovered that, not that it's like a, some sort of a earth-shattering brilliant discovery, but just that people, if a trick is like A to B, if it's like here's what we're going to do, oh my gosh, I hope we do it, and then you do it, very often that's the structure for most tricks, and that's good, it's fine, it works, you know, you pick a card, you lose it, oh my gosh, we found it. But I love the idea of here's a trick, here's what we're gonna do. Oh, crap, we didn't do it.
Uh-oh.
Wow, did he really not do it? I kind of buy that he might have messed up. And then you do it. I feel like it kind of creates a little emotional arc because people know if you're gonna do something, it's gonna work out. And when we try to build in this fake drama that maybe it's not going to work, and then it does, that's interesting. But if you actually can, instead of making it kind of fake drama or struggle and really make it look like you botched it, that's always a fun moment. Or making it look like the trick is... making it look like they actually figured it out on their own is always fun. Mm-hmm. Like the printer in the box trick, or like the, you know, the outfit drawing trick where they color it all in and then you're kind of just thumbing through an envelope as if you're looking for the 19th one. I think it's fun to let people think they catch on to you. In a way, it respects their intelligence right before you crush their intelligence.
You know?
So I think it's just, and somehow I'm able to get away with that same formula over and over and over again without the audience catching on that that's my shtick. By the time the hour is up.
I think as you do it so differently for each piece, which is cool, you know.
Yeah, I mean, some bits, yeah, I like to be very meta about being a magician in that I feel that people have seen enough stuff or are smart enough to know that there is a trick and it's either that it's going to work out or blah, 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 that it's kind of nice to call that out in the process.
Because those are the people that I always encounter in the corporate world or in the college world of, we've seen a magician, we get it. And then, but you haven't seen what I do, in your case, what you do with magic. And that's a very fresh thing. And I think a lot of magicians disagree with that notion of having it very at face value and, you know, not taking what you do so super seriously in a Joe Bluth type way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are guys, the purists who don't like when you do, like I know when I did, when I first started doing my card and balloon routine, which the premise of it is I do the card and balloon, kind of this very, you know, palm off a card, pop a balloon and pretend like it was in the balloon, do that first phase. And then I talk about how these days, people can Google how tricks work, and if you Google it, here's what you're going to find. I'm going to save you the time. You think you want to know, but you don't know. You don't want to know until you know, blah, blah, blah. So then I do the trick and explain each step. It's like Kevin James's card through balloon. Mm-hmm. And I've had magicians say that, I just don't like that you mentioned that people can Google tricks. I think that tells people the wrong thing. And I was like, well, then you're in denial a little bit because I think people know that. If you want them just to not say that in front of you, that's fine. But I know that people talk about that. People like,
if someone really wants to know, they're going to pull out their phone, which is in their pocket.
Right. And I think me mentioning that Google exists and that that is possibly a way, I don't think I'm giving them information they didn't already have.
No.
I think I'm just acknowledging what they're already thinking and making it comfortable to talk about in front of the magician. Because they're going to talk about how your tricks worked in the bathroom after the show, if not right in front of you, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you make it feel like you're going to have your feelings hurt if they have that conversation in front of you, then you don't get a chance to have a say in that conversation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then I've had other people like upset that I show the palming, talk about what palming is as a part of the trick.
Yeah.
But I feel like, and that's fine. Although I feel like, you know, people, if I'm going to do a really, really bad palm and say, this is palming, I might be doing a favor to you when you do your really good palm because they don't know what good palming looks like.
Yeah.
I'm showing them really crappy palming, you know, and then they're feeling stupid the fact that that's fooled them to begin with anyway. Just like Penn and Teller's Clear Cups and Balls, like they're doing the same finger palm load moves that magicians do in their normal
and
cups and balls.
And it's more
routine.
interesting and more astounding. Everybody I've talked to who's not a magician is more amazed at seeing that trick with the clear cups, mm-hmm. just because you respect it so much.
There's so much going on that you actually want to watch it again or a third time and a fourth time because there's all this stuff going on that you didn't know. But I don't know if I'd want to watch your regular cups and balls routine three, four times. You know,
yeah,
I feel like,
it's like, all right,
yeah,
yeah, you're giving them something different. You're fooling them in a different way. You're causing them to use a different part of their brain that they weren't previously using with the first time around.
Exactly. I think. Exactly.
Oh, we talked about the tour. We talked about sleight of mouth. You got married. Yay.
How's I got that? Married. Good. Yeah, it's the best.
Lovely. Lovely wife there.
Yeah.
We won't talk too much about personal
stuff. Well, it's great because she likes magic, but not too much.
Yeah, that's how my wife is too.
She'll come to the castle. She loves it. She still thinks the castle's cool. She likes my magician friends, but I wouldn't take her to a magic convention.
No.
For more than a day, at least. So that's nice. Nice. Is that she appreciates it, but isn't going to become like, you know, a magician herself, which is okay.
Yeah. Conventions
are great.
There's
nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong.
But we know a magic convention is like a vortex. It's like a black hole. You don't leave the hotel. It's weird.
Yeah. It's very, it's unique. I grew up, my dad's a ventriloquist, so I grew up going to ventriloquist conventions my life. And so if you think magic conventions are weird, ventriloquist conventions, people bring their dummies with them to dinner, not at the same hotel. So they'll take them out and they'll be having a conversation.
So everyone's kind of around the dinner table with their dummy in their lap.
Usually just like one or two. Uh-huh. So like a bunch of guys and then just one random person. Like all ventriloquists, but one person with their dummy still. And you're like, okay, maybe you need to let this go. So you've, if you don't mind talking, you mentioned this on Nerdist, I think a while ago, Nerdist podcast, but, you performed at the White House, a couple years ago, a year ago.
I think it was, 2012.
If you don't mind just briefly, I love that story. It's one of my favorite magic stories. I mean, you don't have to tell it verbatim the way you did over on the Nerdist podcast, but I just, if you don't mind touching on it, I think it's such a cool thing.
Yeah, so it was the White House Halloween party, and this girl, Taylor, who was probably at least 10 years younger than me, growing up in St. Louis, I used to do this show at this little summer community that my family had a cottage at. Each year I would do a show there, and she was one of the young kids who would see the show, and she'd see me every year, and kind of just was very familiar with what I do, and that I... You know, went from being a children's entertainer to a family entertainer, and now kind of do a show that has levels to it where, you know, obviously I don't have kids come out to a comedy club, but I can do a family show. I can do a family friendly show, but the adults will enjoy just as much. Anyway, so she, after college, ended up becoming like the social director at the White House, or a social intern at the White House, and they plan the White House events. And so they were planning the Halloween party. Someone mentioned Halloween. We should get a magician. And she threw my name in the hat, in the ring. And so I ended up getting this call. And I was shooting Cupcake Wars at the time. And Cupcake Wars they shifted one shoot date, which is a pretty big deal for them to do. I was very grateful because they thought this was so cool and a once-in-a-lifetime thing. So I had one day off. So after shooting one day, I think we ended it like 9 p.m., I take a red eye to D.C. and take a nap, get to the White House probably around 2 or 3 on like the 30th of October or something, and set up and do this show. Take all my props through Secret Service, you know, it's like puts the TSA to shame where they really don't just x-ray and then they bomb sniff everything. And they're looking through playing cards, one card at a time, holding up to the light just to make sure there's not some sort of cyanide gas or razor blades hidden in there. And then you go set up. And once you're in, you're in. Like, it's chill. It's like you're in someone's house. It's smaller than you think. It felt like a kid's birthday party gig from back in the day. Like, I'm setting up in someone's living room. Except like two tables away, or
what
and
room
Michelle.
Are you in?
The East Room. So it's the room they do for, I think, a lot of the interior press conferences. The room they do for like when you see Rolling Stones or cool bands like play at the White House. Like this is like their. It's probably the biggest room in the White House. It's like their function room kind of thing.
Okay.
And I did two 30-minute sets. The president, first family, were not at the first show, so I was able to get the weird jitters out after the first one, and then for the second one. the Sasha Malia and their friends are all in the front, a bunch of the families of the troops and White House staffers. Everyone's in a costume except for the president. And before the show, before the first show, you get to kind of, because the White House can't pay you to come. It's kind of going to be your civic duty, just because you can imagine political opponents saying like, oh, he paid a magician $1,000.
Yeah.
Obama wasting money on magic, you know, like
taxpayers' money.
All this stuff you can imagine backfiring. So your payment is really, they give you one night in a hotel and your payment is this photo op and a meet and greet. So you get a brief moment with the president and a photo with them, which is priceless. It was more than enough, you know. The show was great. It was super surreal. And he stood at the end and it was like, and then right from there, I had to rush back to the airport to get back to LA to go shoot another silly cupcake competition the next day. So it happened so fast, it felt like a blur.
Was it weird going from the president? Cupcake Wars is obviously a wonderful gig, but was it weird going, I'm in the president's house, and then, all right, here's some cupcakes.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, it was, it really felt like a dream. Like, obviously, the flying back and forth, like, so many factors made me super nervous about it, because if I missed that particular flight to get there, I wouldn't have been able to do the gig. If I missed that exact flight to get back, I would have screwed up the whole cupcake day.
Yeah.
But it all worked out and got that, you know, this cool picture that I'll have forever and this crazy memory. And it was probably the coolest show I've ever done, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of a show that definitely doesn't happen again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't have to reveal it, but did you get a card in his pocket? Did it make a card appear in his pocket? Did you do that?
I did. I was doing card and cupcake.
Okay.
And so I have someone pick a card, and they rip it up and put it inside of a napkin. So they're holding the pieces, and then we kind of open it up, and the pieces are gone. And then I said, Mr. President, do you mind standing up for me and reach into your right pocket? To set up the gag, that would have been awesome gag, you know, because there's nothing in his pocket. But everyone, like kind of gasped a little bit, especially the Secret Service, because they're like, wait, when did he get close enough? Because I was, you know, up to that point in the show, everything you do kind of pays off. So I think they really thought it was going to be his pocket, which makes the gag extra funny. But if there's ever a time where people were going to be super pissed if you got something in his pocket, that was the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because who knows what else I got into his pocket. Yeah.
So you immediately after the show detained for 24 hours.
Who do you work
for? Reviewing the footage. we're wrapping up here, but is there anything like career goals, things? You've done a lot. You've traveled the world. You've been on television multiple times. Is there anything that you want? Any other
goal
in the future, like, that you were looking forward to?
That's the thing is that I think no matter what we all do and achieve, once you tick off that goal, like, you really need to work on like savoring that moment and appreciating it, because that, like, just all these little goals and all these things, the journey is the prize. Like, because, yeah, there's so much stuff that I haven't done. And it's fun to talk about these cool accomplishments and things, and you have to constantly just remind yourself to be very grateful for all those things that you've done, because I'm sure that Tom Cruise is jealous of Brad Pitt, and Brad Pitt is jealous of whoever, and, like, everybody, like, even the biggest, most famous, most successful people, you know, Colbert's jealous of Fallon's ratings, Fallon's jealous of Ellen's ratings, like, everybody wants something more, even the people doing our most crazy pipe dream jobs. So I think that has to be a reminder that we need to just really be content with creating a body of work just to please ourselves. I'm always just wanting to feel expressed, like, feel creatively fulfilled. So doing these shows, like this past weekend in Madison, man, I had, like, it was probably the most fun I've ever had on stage. It was just, like, smart young crowd, great room for comedy, just great corner stage, you know, like, just all the settings were great, and I was able to feel awesome each night, and so I was like, yeah, that's just what I love doing. So obviously I'd love being able to do that for bigger audiences and bigger theaters and bigger places and on TV every week, you know, so those are, like, cool goals that would help you know, the career feel and look better. But I just want to constantly be okay and content, like just doing the show that I want to do and having it feel like it truly represents me at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so easy to like be concerned about the next thing or worry that
there's always the next thing. As soon as one thing happens, it's the next. I mean, as soon as, you know, as soon as like I did the thing I've always wanted to do, which is be on The Tonight Show. It's as soon as it went well, they're like, well, what do you, what else, you got? What you want to, what could you do for the next spot? And you're like, oh crap. Okay. Oh, and you're instantly now scrambling into the, you know, shit. What do I do? What do I do for the next spot? As opposed to just give yourself a week, buddy. And just enjoy that you did that, you know? So it's like, as soon as a dream comes true, there's like a stressful, bigger dream to take care of. Which is exciting, and that's the nature of our career, you know? I mean, we could have a job that's predictable from day to day, but it's not my thing. It's probably not your thing, and probably not a lot of the listeners' things, you know?
It is when there's nothing going on. And when you're really busy, it's easy to forget how the mind changes and how different the feelings are. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, I think ultimately a career of just randomness, and you can be doing this one day and this one day and the next day, and I think that makes it a lot more exciting ultimately.
Yeah. I mean, like, Penn and Teller have a cool thing going for them in that they've got this great, they've got their own theater in Vegas. They get to do the show they want to do as many nights a week as they want to do it, and then on the side they get to do all these fun things.
Sure.
You know, Teller directing a movie, blah blah blah, and these don't have to be huge blockbuster things, but they're just getting their opinions and their voices and their thoughts out and heard, and that's a pretty cool balance, you know, is that they can do the show and then they can each branch off and do these things that make them feel expressed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to assume that they're both happy fellas and that they're enjoying
like
their
it.
Life. They seem like it, you know, and they're so smart. They also do shows like Fool Us or you know, Wizard Wars that just keep, or Celebrity Apprentice that just keep their brand present.
Yeah.
It makes you always aware that they exist to come see their show. I mean, it's I'm sure that there's a differentiation between the things that they do for the love of the art and the things that they do just to make sure for the business brand. You know?
I remember Penn talking about it in his podcast where he's like, if he doesn't do something like The Apprentice at least every like 4 to 6 weeks, somebody will come up to him on the street and go, oh, I'm really sorry you and Teller broke up.
Right.
It's like, no,
dude,
we're
people
just,
forget.
We're,
people are so
gotta remind them.
Quick to forget, especially these days, because you know, the internet is a content monster. It's hungry. It's a hungry beast.
It's
it needs
exhausting.
New stuff all the time. And if you don't give it something for a month, people are like, what are you doing? Is everything okay?
Your YouTube channel is empty.
Buddy, I'm just living my life. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a whole nother conversation. But where can people get tickets for your
JustinWillman.com. I'm sure you'll spell my name right in the description.
I'll
so
try.
Just add a .com at the end of that. You can follow me on Twitter, Justin_Willman. Everything else is just Justin Willman. Twitter is the only thing with the underscore because...
Gotcha. Some jerk stole it.
There's another Justin Willman. No, I mean, it's his name too.
Yeah.
But he tweets like twice a year and I've offered him cupcakes and small monetary trades and he's not interested.
I am nickpaul.net and there's a nickpaul.com. He's an artist in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Never updates his. I haven't checked in a while, but for the longest time, never updating his website. I'm like, can I please have it?
Yeah,
it's. But that's okay. That's how it is. Thank you so much.
Join forces.
Yes, right. Art and magic combined. But thank you so much for doing this.
Pleasure.
Good to talk
to you.
It's
good talk.